This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Now, here's our host, the president of the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up on this edition, religious freedom is under attack in Colorado. The State Civil Rights Commission has ordered that a bakery owner must violate his religious beliefs by providing his services in support of same-sex weddings. ADF allied attorney Nicole Martin joined me for that discussion. And the American people are demanding answers regarding the Obama administration's swap of five senior members of the Taliban for Army Sergeant Bergdahl. Retired Air Force Colonel Rob Manis joined me to share his perspective. Also, FRC continues to urge the Obama administration to act on the matter of Miriam Ibrahim, the Sudanese mother who is in prison awaiting execution for the crime of converting to Christianity. Dr. Richard Land spoke to FRC's Travis Weber about the latest developments in this matter. Let me encourage you to go to the website, tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics. You can also sign up for my daily update right there on the website, tonyperkins.com. Well, listeners of this program are probably familiar with the story of Jack Phillips, the owner of Masterpiece Cakes in Colorado, who is under fire for refusing to violate his religious beliefs by providing his services for a same-sex wedding. While religious freedom is a right guaranteed in the United States Constitution, and there are plenty of other bakers who would be willing to take the job, homosexual activists could not pass up an opportunity in their quest to force affirmation of their agenda. After a two-year tug-of-war with the state's Civil Rights Commission, Phillips was ordered last Friday to bake cakes for same-sex couples regardless of his Orthodox Christian beliefs. The commission also mandated that the bakery's staff undergo comprehensive training on the state's anti-discrimination laws. Mr. Phillips is one of many entrepreneurs around the country being targeted for simply living out the tenets of their faith. And this is an alarming example of where religious freedom is headed in our country. Mr. Phillips' attorney, Nicole Martin, joined me to discuss the case. Can this decision be appealed to a real court? I know they have authority, but I don't think they're real. I mean, to me, they're more like a kangaroo court. But can this be appealed? Is this the final word?
This is not the final word. The state of Colorado has absolutely no business forcing Jack to abandon deeply held convictions that everybody knows are protected by the First Amendment, in order to impose a new and government-approved belief system upon him. So we are considering our next steps, and if we decide that an appeal is the best thing for Jack, then there is a direct appeal to the Colorado Court of Appeals, which is a court of record.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, these civil rights commissions, human rights commissions, many states have them, and they've been pretty much, you know, latent. You haven't heard a lot from them, but I think it was a part of the overall plan. Is they have very sympathetic individuals that are in many cases on these commissions, which I think we're salivating, chomping at the bit to get cases like this. We've seen the same thing in Oregon, another state that had, up until recently, in their constitution, the definition of marriage as a man and a woman. And so people are just living, not only out living their faith in terms of their viewpoint, but actually living in accordance with the law, and they find themselves before these kangaroo courts.
Sure. Yeah, you don't know which way to go. I mean, how is a citizen supposed to conduct herself or himself when the law agrees with the stand that Jack is making?
Right.
It's particularly troubling from a body that is the investigator, the prosecutor, the judge, and the jury. It's extremely troubling that a body with that much discretion, authority, and power can simply say your First Amendment rights must bow to a recently enacted state statute.
And what
we should all pause.
And what accountability is there for a commission like this?
I'm drawing a blank, Tony.
I mean, they're appointed. They're not elected. They don't.
That's right. They
basically have no accountability. And so that's why you get these outlandish decisions. And I want to – I'm talking to Nicole Martin. She represents Jack Phillips, owner of Masterpiece Cakes in Colorado, a decision out last Friday, which orders him and this is not new. We've had others, as these cases have progressed, ordered him now to make wedding cakes for same-sex couples. But here, Nicole, is what I find most troubling. Is that they are now mandating that everybody within that bakery undergo training to make sure they're in compliance with the wishes of this commission. I mean, I'm beginning to think, now, are re-education camps next? You know, when are they going to start rolling out the boxcars to start hauling off Christians? I mean, at what point do Christians say enough is enough?
I guess when the witch hunt gets very painful or more personal. But I guarantee that we are going to continue to see the witch hunt, and we will continue to see it carried out in the public square. And if they can't get to you in the public square, in other words, if you're not as, if you don't have as much gravitas as someone like Dan Cathy or Brandon Eich, then they can get you into a civil rights commission or a tribunal, because the pound of flesh, you violate the Holy Grail, the pound of flesh will be exacted. I mean, Tony, this is a country founded by religious refugees. I find it incredible that we're turning citizens like Jack and other artists into refugees today. I think it's pretty appalling.
I also think it should be pointed out that as they came here to this country, and historians, secular historians, one professor, I recall Samuel Huntington, now deceased at Harvard, not a conservative, but pointed out that what made America so successful economically was the work ethic that emanated from the Protestant religion. And the very thing that has made our economy successful is now what's being targeted in the marketplace, and that is faith. Now, I have to, Nicole, I have to commend Jack. He has been unyielding, but yet compassion, loving, kind, speaking the truth in love. But he is not about to surrender these. What I get is that he can't, because this is who he is, and he cannot be something that he's not.
That's right. I think you've captured him perfectly. He is resolved. He is a gentle spirit. And he is simply trying to live his life, much like the complainants, I would like to add. He's simply trying to live his life in accordance with his belief system. And he's no American, no artist. People who make their living as artists should be punished for that. They shouldn't be forced by the government to say or do things that contradict their deepest convictions.
Nicole, what's next for Jack? Any idea?
Well, we are considering our next steps. Of course, you know, it's a big decision whether to venture down the road of the appellate court system. And we're just trying to stand with Jack, whatever he decides.
All right. Nicole Martin, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate you joining us and updating us, but also appreciate you working with Jack and helping him stand for his faith.
My honor. My honor. Thank you, Tony.
Again, that was Nicole Martin. To find out more about her and her client, so Mr. Phillips, go to the website tonyperkins.com and follow the links over. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking more about the big subject for the week, trading five Taliban soldiers for an Army sergeant who walked off his post. Colonel Rob Maness joins me for that discussion when we return. Don't go away. We're coming back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Do marriage laws really matter? Our culture is confused about the meaning and purpose of marriage, but sometimes we're also confused about what our laws actually say. In a new publication called Marriage on Trial, FRC analysts explain some of our recent Supreme Court cases, demystify state laws about marriage, and also explain the key legal reasons why marriage has always been the union between one man and one woman. To download your copy, visit frc.org/marriageontrial.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The exchange of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl for 5 ranking members of the Taliban has dominated the national discussion this week, and for good reason. There are so many facets to this situation that need exploring, from the president's legal handling of the situation to the nature of Sergeant Bergdahl's service to the security threat posed by releasing these individuals. This story isn't going away anytime soon because Americans are demanding answers. Colonel Rob Manis made the decision as a 17-year-old high school senior to enlist in the Air Force and served in the midst of the Iranian hostage crisis. He worked his way up from the enlisted ranks to a full colonel and retired from active duty in 2011 after over 32 years of service. During his military service, Colonel Manis led numerous combat operations, 2 of which were as a bomber squadron commander in Operation Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom. Colonel Manis served as an enlisted bomb disposal tech in 3 assignments countering terrorism before being commissioned and selected for flight training. As a Joint Chiefs of Staff Operations Officer, he was on duty in the National Military Command Center located within the Pentagon during the September 11, 2001 attacks. In the ensuing months, he directly assisted the United States National Security Team in creating, synchronizing, and executing the campaign plan for the global war on terrorism. He joined me on Thursday to offer his reaction to the Bergdahl story. Well, Colonel, I've talked to a number of military officers, mostly retired, in the last 72 hours. What was your reaction to this situation upon news of the release of these 5 top Taliban commanders?
You know, it is unfathomable that we would put 5 four-star general equivalents back on the battlefield for our American men and women to face, and our allied soldiers in Afghanistan, armed forces, to have to face. And that's what's going to happen, quite frankly. I've studied these folks both in Afghanistan and Pakistan, both from the Al-Qaeda ranks and the Taliban ranks, and they will be back on the battlefield within a matter of months. Mm-hmm. You can assume that. And our young men and women will be facing them, and they will be much more dangerous than they were the day they went into Guantanamo Bay. Even though they may have been disconnected, they had learned a lot about Americans from their experience in the prison. I guarantee you that.
Yeah.
These folks are observers of human nature and of cultures, and they study targets for years and years and years and years. As much as 5 years, in my experience, these folks will study a target. And then they'll hit that target when the time is right for their purposes.
Yeah, I think that's something very good to point out, that they've been in custody in the United States for over a dozen years, not in the United States, but in Gitmo. And you're right. I think they've learned a lot about America, our strengths, if there's any left, and our weaknesses, certainly under this administration. And they will use that against us. My first reaction, and I was working with the State Department in anti-terrorism back in the late 80s, early 90s, and before anti-terrorism was a big deal, we worked mostly internationally. But one of the things, this type of exchange would, I think they declare it a victory and would it would inspire them. And sure enough, today, Time Magazine conducts an interview with one of the Taliban leaders, and Time asked whether the Taliban would be inspired by the exchange to kidnap others. This Taliban leader laughed, quote, "Definitely," he says, "it's better to kidnap one person like Bergdahl than kidnapping hundreds of useless people. It has encouraged our people," end quote. I mean, that's just basic. And I think more and more Americans, especially soldiers serving in hostile places, are now at greater risk as a result of this.
Oh, absolutely. Our soldiers and Marines and all of those airmen and folks that support them, including our Foreign Service folks from the State Department, are at much greater risk today. Not just because these guys are back near the battlefield, but what you just mentioned. You know, their folks have been encouraged, which means that the Al-Qaeda folks have also been encouraged, which means that the risk increases not only in that theater of operations, but around it and anywhere else where Al-Qaeda operatives can reach.
Yeah. Colonel, I want to ask you one last question before I let you go. In a more broad sense, after serving a career 32 years in the Air Force, are you concerned about the environment in which our men and women in uniform are serving under this administration?
I am absolutely concerned under this administration. Last year, I actually published an article titled Military Religious Freedom. And I know that you have a team, an organization that's taking a hard look at that, defending folks whose religious freedom has been put at risk under this administration. And because that's the foundation of the chaplain, is the foundation of service for our military men and women and their families, sometimes in very far away places, as you're aware, Tony. And if we can't keep religious freedom in that organization, then how do we keep it in the rest of America is what I'm concerned about from that perspective. And it has very, very far-reaching impact when we see folks that are, say, Christians under attack in their own armed services, especially, unfortunately, my own service, the Air Force, is perceived as leading the charge on military religious freedom restrictions. We need to make sure that we are looking at that very closely and turning that around every opportunity we get.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Those that are defending our freedoms are systematically having theirs taken away. Colonel, thanks so much for being with us. I appreciate you joining us with your insight on this issue.
Thanks a lot, Tony. God bless you guys for the work that you do for our country.
Again, that was Colonel Rob Maness, who was retired after 32 years in the United States Air Force. He's currently a candidate for the United States Senate in my home state of Louisiana. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. All right, when we come back, we'll return to the topic of Maryam Ibrahim, the Sudanese mother who is in prison awaiting execution because she converted to Christianity. That's coming up next on the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Imagine you own a business. You take great care of your workers and provide health insurance. And one day, the government mandates that you pay for your employees' contraceptives, including drugs that could end a human life. You're facing millions of dollars in fines, but you're reluctant to violate your conscience. What would you do? Hobby Lobby and other companies are facing this attack. Here at FRC, we're fighting to protect their conscience and yours. For more information, visit frc.org/mandate resources.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. To find out more about today's topics, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can also sign up for my daily update. Comes to you Monday through Friday, right into your email inbox. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, many of you, like us, have been following the ongoing efforts to free Maryam Ibrahim, the Sudanese mother who is in prison awaiting execution for the crime of converting to Christianity. There have been varying reports on the status of her case, but as of this weekend, one thing remains the same. President Obama is yet to comment on the situation, and Maryam and her two children, one 20 months old and one just a little over a week old, are in one of the most deadly prisons in Khartoum, where one infant, according to the UN, dies each day during the summer months, which they are now in. If you haven't already signed our White House petition urging the president to act immediately on behalf of Maryam and her two children, go to frc.org/Sudan, frc.org/Sudan, or go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, listen now as Dr. Richard Land discusses the situation with FRC's director of the Center for Religious Liberty, Travis Weber, earlier this week.
Talk to me about what's been going on with Maryam Ibrahim and the possibility that she's going to be freed.
Right. Well, it's rather difficult to determine exactly what's going on. You know, I think part of that is due to the situation developing in Sudan, and also partly due to the conflicting reports that we're hearing, and the government making statements, then clarifying those statements and saying, "Well, that's not what we meant," and you know, putting out different versions of events. In short, a few days ago, the foreign minister made a statement that appeared to indicate that there was a mere legal technicality that needed to be overcome, and then she would be freed. Now the government has come back and said, no, that's not the case. What we mean is that she is pursuing an appeal. If she is successful, she may be freed. So that's a much different version of events than the government basically saying, we're behind this and we're going to make it happen.
Well, now, Travis, you're the Family Research Council's director for the Center for Religious Liberty. And there may be some people who don't know about Miriam's story. Could you just recount that for us briefly?
Sure. She was raised as a Christian by her Ethiopian Christian mother after her father, who was Muslim, basically abandoned the family when she was very young. So she's always considered herself a Christian. She was raised as a Christian, never really thought otherwise, always practiced her faith and life as a Christian. And she married a Christian man from Sudan who's also an American citizen. Recently, some folks who claim to be her relatives, it's unclear exactly if they are or are not her relatives, have filed a complaint against her, claiming her marriage was unlawful, basically according to them, because she was Muslim and she married a Christian man. The authorities then investigated, charged her with adultery under the country's laws, and then added a charge for apostasy, based on their claim that she was Muslim because her father was Muslim and she could not convert to Christianity in their view, or become a Christian or practice as a Christian. So she's refused to claim she's a Muslim or profess faith in Islam. She's holding to her Christian beliefs as she always has. And on that ground, she's been convicted of adultery, sentenced to 100 lashes, and convicted of apostasy and sentenced to death. And she's now sitting in prison. The other part of this story is she has a young child and just gave birth to one more while in prison. And, you know, I think all these facts added up together really make this a story of international concern and one of really highlights the importance of religious freedom as a fundamental human right.
Now, do you have any information that our government is doing anything to help secure her release?
Well, I don't have much specific information as to exactly what the government is doing. You know, it's possible that they may be acting behind the scenes to help her. They've certainly given no indication of that. However, the government has officially expressed their concern. You know, but frankly, it seems like international aid groups and foreign governments have done more to highlight the situation. Mm. You know, I mean, the U.S. government, I think, needs to be doing much more here, if nothing else, than at least stating its position, you know, which is one in support and really should be in support of religious freedom as a fundamental right. You know, I mean, this is something that Sudan has signed on to international treaties under which it is bound to uphold religious freedom as a fundamental right. And even under its own constitution, this criminal code, which has been used to convict her, is likely unconstitutional under the religious freedom provisions of Sudan's constitution. So there's certainly grounds to highlight here and point out to Sudan. It really needs to come into line on this.
Talk to us a little bit about the general situation out there in the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you know, a lot of folks know, religious freedom worldwide has been an issue of concern to folks of many faiths and to many Christians in many places throughout the world. You know, I mean, currently, you know, we're in a world in which an American is being held in Iran. And, you know, at this point, he's still sitting in Iranian
prison. An American
prison.
Citizen.
That's correct, yes. And just recently, North Korea has convicted an individual, and he's now sitting in prison for activities related to his religion. You know, and this is something that, you know, it's one thing for statements to be made public pronouncements to be put forth, but it's another when a government really can get behind religious freedom as a principle, not only a principle, but something that's been enshrined in international human rights law since we dealt with the horror of World War II, you know, and there's a reason that we have treaties and countries agree to put themselves mm-hmm. under those treaties and agree to uphold those principles. And at least a government can do is point that out and hold folks' feet to the fire. But in many places throughout the world, it's still an issue, and it's growing into more of an issue at home domestically as we deal with legislative and judicial assaults on the exercise of faith by folks in all areas of their lives.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I was really proud of Tony. I saw Tony the other night talking on this about on Fox and calling for people to sign a White House petition. Tell us about that White House petition.
Well, so the White House petition, we had set up the process for a White House petition on the issue of Miriam in Sudan, and we called on folks to go ahead and add their name to it to let the White House know that American citizens out there are aware of the situation and we're really deeply concerned about it. And we want our voices to be heard. We want the U.S. government to act on it. And, that's one way we can do that is getting a lot of folks' names and voices in a place where the White House knows this is their position and they care about what's going on in Sudan.
And if people want to sign that, they can go to frc.org/Sudan.
Yes, and we at this point, we need to keep the pressure on the administration and to act, and we need to keep the pressure on the Sudanese government here, and I think both of those points of pressure need to be maintained, and the U.S. government can specifically bring that pressure to bear on the Sudanese government. This is really something that we need to keep the pressure on and attention on until it's addressed and she's freed.
Again, that was Dr. Richard Land having a discussion with FRC's Director of the Center for Religious Liberty, Travis Weber. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over and sign the petition calling on the president to speak out on behalf of Miriam and her two small children. Well, folks, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate you listening. And if you have any questions or comments, go to TonyPerkins.com and send me an email. Well, until next time, remember the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. You've done all that you can do. You've prayed, you've prepared, you've taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch Weekly is a donor-supported ministry of the Family Research Council.